Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fly in the Lab. My name is Maria, and I am a scientist, PhD student, science communicator, and host of this podcast. Fly in the Lab is a place where we can all chat and laugh about our science confessions or lab mishaps. This podcast is a place where we can dispel myths about scientists and really share some of the humour that gets us through the day-to-day struggles, of which there are many. Thank you so much for joining me, and I hope that you enjoy listening to Fly in the Lab. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Fly in the Lab. Oh, it's been, you know what? I feel like life is just throwing a lot at me right now. It's been another really busy week. I have been teaching this week. So last week and this week have been the first times that I've done any sort of teaching. I've been teaching some undergraduate students, and it's been quite a surreal experience. I feel like going into it, I felt like I just didn't really know very much. And to be honest, I was terrified to teach these students. You know, I felt like I just didn't know enough to teach them. But, you know, I think I did myself a bit of an injustice, and going into it, I didn't realize how much I actually know. And I actually impressed myself with how much I remembered from my own undergraduate degree. And after the first 10, 15 minutes where I felt a bit awkward, I felt like I eased up into it a bit more, and it went quite smoothly actually in the end. And I actually really enjoyed working with the student. It was really, really nice to share some things that I know with the students. And it was really, really great. So I'm really pleased that I had the opportunity to do that. I'm feeling quite emotionally done today, to be honest. It's been a week of highs and lows, and we're only on Wednesday. So who knows what the rest of the week will bring. But it was so nice today to chat to Beth Webb, who is an absolutely lovely PhD student based in Leeds. As with Livy, I had never actually met Beth before, but I was really excited to speak to her because I just felt like I'd known her for years. And as it stands, it was just like having a conversation with an old friend. And it was really great to hear a little bit at the start about Beth's current research looking at platelets, which are, as she explained, cells in the blood in CVD. And yeah, it was like catching up with an old friend, and I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation that we had. We covered some very interesting, should I say that, topics. We talked about semen, which is always, you know, a great conversation starter. We talked about taking patients' blood, maybe being a little bit mean about it, and also spreading some of our own germs, which is both disgusting and fascinating at the same time. I don't know if that's just me speaking as a scientist. There might be some people listening to this who are thinking, oh, absolutely not. But anyway, it was a great discussion, and I can't wait for you to hear it. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Fly in the Lab. I am joined today by the lovely Beth Webb. Beth, thank you so much for joining me. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very excited. I'm Beth. I'm a final year PhD student at the University of Leeds, which is a bit terrifying. I'm studying. Yeah, it's a bit scary how fast time has flown. I'm studying platelets, which are tiny cells in the blood that help us to form blood clots, but they cause a few problems during cardiovascular disease, such as hyperactive platelets can lead to cardiovascular events such as thrombosis, heart attacks, or strokes. So my project is looking at platelet inhibition to see if we can understand what goes wrong during that time.
That's great. No, I think your project is so interesting. I mean, I know I said this last week with Livy, and you know, I'll say it again with you. I was really excited to like speak to you and kind of have you on here, because I feel like your project spans so many almost like different disciplines, because you're in the lab, but also you also have a bit of like that patient focus as well, don't you? Because you actually take the blood.
Yeah. So it's we have like normal lab stuff, and then there's like clinical studies as well, and then we accept blood donations from people that are on campus. So I take the blood, which is a bit weird because I was so like, my parents always laughed at me when I was like, I'm gonna go and do like a PhD in blood, because I used to be so squeamish when I was younger, and now it's like ironic that I'm like, yeah, I'm studying blood and taking blood, I donate blood, I'm not bothered by any of the grossness now, which is a bit weird. Exposure therapy. Yeah, it's quite a mix of different things, but it's good fun.
I love that. I think that it's funny because my parents were exactly the same. You know, when I was younger, I was quite squeamish and I didn't really like getting dirty or anything like that. And they think it's hilarious that like I'm now really into science. And I mean, I don't really do much with blood, but I used to work in histology with, yeah, you know, tissues and organs and things like that. And I was just not bothered at all. And they were like, who even are you? Like, this is so out of what you have always been like. It's just, it's really like funny hearing it from like your perspective as well.
Yeah, I mean, I always say, well, it's very different, like, in a test tube and in a very, like, lab-based setting. Like, if someone was, like, you know, had, like, a horrific wound in front of me, I don't think I would be useful under any circumstances.
Yeah,
but in the lab I'm like, yeah, it's all good, no worries.
That's good. I did a little bit of a rotation in the hematology labs when I was in the hospital, and I have to be honest, I didn't really like it. Like, seeing all those bags of blood, I was a bit like, ugh. And I didn't think I would be that squeamish about it, but I don't know if I was just getting a bit too in my head, but I just seeing like that volume of blood just wasn't for me. But I mean, I think it's really interesting that, you know, like, you can take the blood. I mean, like, does it take much, did you have to have a lot of training for that, or, and who even gives the training for stuff like that?
So I actually went to the Leeds Beckett University, which is, there's like multiple universities in Leeds, but our university didn't do it for some reason, even though we had a med school. So I went to Leeds Beckett University and did it like as part of the nursing training.
Okay.
So like I just went on the session where they did the venipuncture session. You go for one, it's like a full day thing. You practice on like this fake arm that has like, it looks like red wine in it, basically. It's really funny.
Oh.
And then you get like a certificate, so that you've attended, and then you have to do it so many times and then get signed off by someone that's also a phlebotomist, and then you're pretty much free to do it.
That's really cool. So is that sort of like a qualification that you then hold for life, or is it something that you have to keep topping up? Or
I have this certificate to say that I've been on the course, and then I have my, like, I have some documentation to say that I've been signed off, but I think if I was to go anywhere else, someone might have to watch me take blood just to make sure that I'm
right,
up to scratch or whatever, ironically. But yeah, it's weird. Like, I was so nervous the first few times doing it, like so nervous, obviously, because it's like people that you know, like, yeah, you get your mates to come in and be like, yeah, I'll donate, and you're like, oh, I don't want you, yeah, to hate me.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective, because I think it's one thing if it's somebody who you don't know, and if you don't do a good job or if you can't get the blood out, it doesn't matter, you're never going to see them again. But
yeah.
If it's your mate, and I think especially, you know, if you're doing a PhD and, you know, if your friends are outside of your PhD, they might be a bit like, oh, you know, like, you know what you're doing, you're like really good at all of this science stuff, and then if it doesn't really go exactly how you want it to, then it can be a bit embarrassing, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I used to get so nervous, and like the feedback that I got was very good, because it helped me improve. But now, like, I don't know, I think you just, it's like with anything really, you get to a point where I'm just not fazed by it. And I love it when people say like, oh, I have really challenging veins, like, you can't really get
you're like, step aside. Like,
I was like, I will, don't you worry. I have competition with myself to get it, and like, so far so good.
I love it. I feel like that's just like a PhD life in a nutshell, like having a competition with yourself.
Yeah.
So you said as well that you're a third year PhD student, like I am as well. How is the PhD going? How are you feeling about the impending deadline? Can we talk about it? Will it freak you out?
No, it's all right. I was having a bit of a moment this week. I don't know, you know when you just feel a bit overwhelmed with all the stuff that you have to do?
Boy, do I know that feeling. Yeah. Well.
I'm having one of those moments this week. So I'm gonna be like, I've not got enough time to do all these things, and I want to do all of these things, and it's not gonna happen. But it's fine. Like, I, in my first year, I progressed quite quickly. I was quite fortunate with that. But then obviously year two, pandemic. That was challenging, as we all know.
Unfortunately,
And then it's just been, it's going all right. Like some weeks I'm like, yeah, this is awesome, we got this, absolutely smashing it. And then other weeks, like this week, I'm like, oh no, there's not enough hours in the day to do anything.
It is definitely very up and down. I feel exactly the same, if that makes you feel any better. I think sometimes I'm kind of riding the storm and I'm like, yeah, it's fine, I'm doing things and I'm gonna get there. And then I'll have another week where I'm just like, there are not enough hours in the day, there's not enough days in the week, and I definitely don't have enough time before my funding runs out to get everything done.
Yeah, that's what I like. I'm pleased it's not just me, but like it's definitely, I mean, I don't know about you, I don't know if you did, you get an extension at all for your PhD?
Yeah, so I got a 3-month extension. So if anybody sort of isn't doing a PhD and is listening to this, I think probably like many, when the pandemic was on, a lot of us were working at home and we didn't have access to obviously the labs. I went back after, I think it was 5 months. So lockdown started in March 2020. Yeah. And then it was August when I went back into the lab. So I missed out on about 5 months. So I didn't get that full 5 months back, but you know, 3 months is better than no months. So I'm taking that as a win. Did you get any?
Yeah, I was quite fortunate because I'd just gone into my second year. And it really just depends on who funds you, I guess, as to how generous the extension was. So I got 6 months, a 6-month extension,
right.
But I couldn't take blood for 9 months.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah.
So it was like I could do certain things, like thank my lucky stars that past me had hoarded loads of samples pre-COVID.
Yes, past bad. Well done.
I wouldn't have. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't believe it. But she had foresight. I can't believe it. Because if I hadn't have had that, I wouldn't have really been able to do anything.
Oh, gosh.
So like being in the lab would have been pointless. So yeah, I did get 6 months, but I don't know how it was for you, but like obviously there was limited work hours when you were back, and then like obviously there was delays with reagents and things, so yeah. It's probably a lot longer than like the extensions that were given, but you just gotta work with what you've got really, aren't you? So
yeah, it's, I mean, I've spent countless nights, days kind of thinking about a lot of like the what ifs and really panicking that I'm not gonna have as good of a PhD coming out of this is what I would have if we hadn't have had that pandemic. But you're right, at the end of the day, like it is what it is, and we just have to make the most of what little extension we have, and you know, we will be all right in the end. You know, we work hard, and as you say, you've been able to do some stuff, and I'm not sure I necessarily utilized lockdown as best as I could, but I just really struggled to work at home, so I got done what I got done. You know.
Yeah, same. I definitely like, I got a bit stressed out when everyone was like, oh, I'm being so productive at home. I'm like, oh well, good for you.
Yeah.
I'm not. I wish I was.
I was exactly the same. I was like reading, I'm not even joking, like 1 or 2 papers a week, and that was like at my peak productiveness. I just, it wasn't for me. I'm not the biggest fan of working from home, I have to be honest, because there's always just so much that I want to do. I'm like, oh, I could do this washing or tidy this up, and I'm just, discipline wise when it comes to that, I'm not the greatest.
Yeah, I'm a bit better now, I think. I do work from home like 1 day a week, just because of like I just chat to people. I'm terrible. I'm like, you know that meme where someone has like the sign on the back being like, don't talk to me.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That is me. Like that is me. And I just think like for myself and others, I need 1 day a week at home so we can all just crack on.
I feel that. And I feel like that like sort of slightly nicely segments us into what our poll is for this episode. So kind of on the topic of working from home but also not, is, you know, when you do get to work, how do you get to work? And I saw that you'd answered this poll and actually messaged me about this. So the one that I've picked for us is, you've been late to work because you've slept in, but you've blamed it on traffic. And so many people replied to this saying, oh, you know, I work from home and I still use this as an excuse. And I just thought that's amazing. So the options were yes or no. Do you want to have a guess of what way the proportions went for the voting? I think this might shock you, to be honest.
So how many people blamed it on the traffic? I'm going to say like 70%, just to make myself feel better.
Bang on. 72% said yes and 28% said no. I was like,
what? That 28% are lying.
I know. I mean, I'm notoriously bad at being on time, mainly for social events. Like, I like to think that I'm on time for work, maybe like 5 minutes late, but for social events, like if I'm going out or something like that, I'm always late, and I always blame it on the traffic. I'm like, oh, terrible, there was an accident, there was a fox on the road, like, oh, I'm terrible for it. But I was really, to be honest, I was quite shocked that it swung that way, because I thought people would, I don't know if I thought they'd be more honest, or if I just thought that people were just better in general.
No, we all suck.
Oh, but what made me laugh is there was quite a few people as well who messaged and said that they use that excuse and they don't even drive in. And honestly, I was howling, because I know, I remember we kind of bonded, if you will, over the northern weather and having to walk to work in your like big thick parka jacket in the rain. And it just, as soon as I put this up, I thought, I really hope that Beth replies to this, because I just feel like this will resonate with you.
Yeah. I can't really get away with it when I'm rocking up to work in, like, you know, mountain warehouse gear. You know what I mean?
Your umbrella hat.
It was the traffic. And they all know that I live like in the city as well, so I have no excuse. But thankfully, like, it's pretty chill. We don't have like work times as such anymore, which is,
oh, that's good.
It's good, but that's bad for me. I feel like when I used to commute and have to get a train, I would be fine, because it'd be like, I've got to get the train, it's the train that I need to get. Whereas now I'm like, oh, be fine, just walking.
There is that, to be fair, because I think with doing a PhD, normally you can just kind of rock up whenever you want. And sometimes that isn't the best, because at least if you know you need to start at 9, you're in at 9. But sometimes, like, I could be having a particularly slow morning and I'm like, oh, it's fine, I can just rock up at 9:30, 10 o'clock. But that's not really too conducive to having the most productive of days. So
no, they talk about discipline, and I just feel like, yeah, I think most of us are pretty disciplined, but we have our moments.
definitely there'll be, I'm hoping that like some of my friends will be listening to this and they'll be like, yeah, Maria, yeah, you might need to work on that.
Love that.
I know.
So if we meet socially, I'll have to just like give you a different time then.
You'll absolutely have to. I'm not even joking, like, most people have to give me a time that's like 45 minutes before I'm actually due to turn up. Honestly, I'm so bad. I shouldn't be admitting this. I really shouldn't, because I feel like people are going to be listening to this like, well, she's not the best. I'm like, what if my boss is listening to this and she's like, that's not ideal. I do turn up to work.
Just the social aspects. So.
Yeah, of course. I 100% didn't turn up late this morning. No, I actually didn't. I was in early this morning.
Yes.
So when we had a chat before this episode, I asked if you had any confessions that you wanted to make. So this podcast is all about dispelling myths and talking about the science mishaps and confessions that, you know, go on day to day, but under the surface sometimes. So do you have anything that you'd like to confess to the listeners?
Well, I have a couple. I don't know if it's good. We'll see how the first one goes, and then whether we
want
to divulge into more.
Okay, go for it.
So when I did my placement year during my undergraduate degree, it was in the same building that I'm doing my PhD in, but it was in a different lab. And the project was a drug discovery project for trying to find a better drug to treat thrombosis. So we use a lot of like small molecule compounds, and I was testing them, and we had an absolute bank of them. We had absolutely loads, and they were all number coded in these ridiculous like codes. And on my last day of working on my placement, for an entire year for free. One of my friends who was also on a placement year, like, made me jump as I was putting this like box of compounds back into the freezer. She didn't do it on purpose. I'm quite a jumpy person. And she just came in and like spoke, and I just dropped the entire thing. And like, they went everywhere under the freezer. Like, they just absolutely went everywhere. They were in glass vials, so I'm very lucky that they didn't smash. Thank God, really. I probably would have never been able to come back. And I spent my, like, the last, you know, hour of that day on my hands and knees.
Oh, bless you.
And I don't think I got them back in the right order. And I don't think anyone noticed or cared, but I was absolutely mortified. I was like, I've made it so far. And this is what happened on the last day. And I just was like, well, you know what? It's the last day. I'm just going to put it back and hope for the best and hope that no one notices and it'll be fine. May have lost some under the
freezer,
but I couldn't get them out, so
it'll be fine. That's so typical, and you're right, if it's going to happen, it's going to be on the very last day. There's absolutely no way that's going to happen like within your first week.
Honestly, I couldn't believe it. I was like, why? And then another one is when I then went to go back and work in that lab after I finished my degree.
Oh, well, good that they had you back. That's a good sign.
They had me back. Probably regretting it if they
did. Oh, no.
And then I, like, I'd already accepted the PhD position for, like, the next year kind of thing. And again, it was during my last week. I don't know what's... I just save it. Like, maybe I should never leave places and I won't absolutely trash the place. We had to make up this, like, inhibitor. And I've done the calculations, make it up, blah, blah, blah. And the calculation seemed a bit weird, but I was like, no, I've done it a couple of times. It seems right. And it meant that we had to aliquot it, which is like, you know, taking a small bit out of them, like the main stock, and putting them into little Eppendorf tubes. And I'd obviously miscalculated it, and myself and the other placement students were like pipetting it out for ages and ages and ages, in like 5 microliter aliquots from this massive stock. And then I triple checked my calculations after we'd done it, and realized that if you wanted to do one experiment, you'd need like 10 different, you'd need 10 separate aliquots.
Oh no. Oh.
And I just never told anyone. I just left it as it was. And this massive bag of stuff in the freezer. And I was like, I can't tell anyone. I can't do it. And I was like, what an idiot. Like, you checked it. Like, how did you get this so wrong? And then naturally decides to go and do a PhD.
That's so easily done, though. I mean, even I did that this morning, or something similar this morning, where I was trying to scale up an experiment because I was like, I'm just not going to have enough chemicals to do this experiment, and I spent ages doing the calculations, and then I looked back at the protocol and I was like, wait, that's just like one tiny component of the overall sample, so of course it's going to cover them all. Why am I trying to make it harder than it needs to be? And I was just like, I've just wasted 2 hours of my life on this. And that's a less extreme example, but so easy done. Don't beat yourself up, we've all been there.
It just it cracks me up, and then like just seeing people go into the freezer to get it out, and I'm like, sorry.
Not my problem anymore, it's fine.
Yeah, it's not my problem, I'm in a different lab, so
I mean, I would maybe suggest like not going back there after you finish your PhD, but
probably not, they probably won't want me back, just absolutely dropping compounds all over the show, miscalculating things all on my last week.
Wow. Yeah, well, you're right. Just don't ever leave anywhere. So in 10 years' time, you'll still be doing this PhD and it'll all be fine.
I don't think I would hack that.
I don't think anybody could. I can't imagine anything worse.
Yeah. I mean, I think 3 to 4 years is the max, really.
Well, the first confession might actually make you feel better, because this person might have put you to shame with this. It's going to cheer you up, I can guarantee. So, this is the first confession. I'm a nurse. Sometimes patients can suck. Don't get me wrong. Most of the time they're great. And even if they're a little off, I usually chalk it down to them just being nervous. However, Sometimes they are just the worst and can be so, so rude. I've been sworn at, hit, threatened, etc. So, long story short, if I get a particularly difficult patient, I will purposely choose a bigger needle than I need to take their blood. You're going to feel a sharp pinch, asshole.
Wow. Brutal.
I mean, each to their own, you know?
It's a good job. This is anonymous.
I know. I was like, I cannot condone this violence, but wow.
That is brutal. I mean, wow. I mean, I don't work with like patients as such. Like, it's usually volunteers, so people are usually well up for it, for the most part. But yeah, I can imagine some like patients can be really, really rude. But I do feel like that's quite extreme. But then also, is it? You've got the power. I don't know.
I do feel like I've heard of this before, to be honest. And I don't know if it's like because I've read about it somewhere. Have you read that book? It's by that junior doctor. This is going to hurt.
This is going to hurt. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like it's like something along those lines. Like it's sort of one of those like underhand things that probably does happen in the medical profession that we're just like not aware of like little things where, because I'm sure like it obviously won't absolutely kill, but maybe like where something could be done with like a nice fine needle if they just use like a slightly chunkier one just to get a little bit extra bruising. Like, oh, I feel like I can't condone it, but oh, if they're being horrible to you, is that just satisfaction? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess in like different situations, like, you know, if you work in an A&E and it's like loads of drunk people that have been an absolute pain, then it's kind of like, yeah, this might sober you up. Stop being annoying.
There is that, definitely. Yeah, you definitely see things like that on like 24 hours in A&E and things like that, don't you?
24 hours in A&E.
That's so good. Sometimes I'm like, why did I not go into this? And then I'm like, oh no, yeah, you're like really squeamish and awful under pressure.
One of my friends is a doctor. She's like, why don't you come to clinic one day and just watch? I was like, I'd love to, but isn't that weird? Just me being like an absolute nerd.
If you were going to do it, it would definitely be good to just like sit there and observe, because then all of the pressure's off you. You don't have to, you know, do anything. You can leave work at the door and just like have a bit of a laugh at what some people come in with. Because I imagine they must see some interesting characters who've got themselves into some very interesting predicaments.
Yeah, I mean, A&E must be just
wild.
A wild ride indeed. Another friend of mine, he's like, he's training to be a nurse and he did a placement on A&E. And I was like, how do you find it? He was like, it's mental. I love it. And I was like, well, at least you do.
It must be like you either love it or you hate it. Like thrive off that, like not knowing and like the random things that happen, or you're just like, this is absolutely not for me. Like I need it to be nice and regimented and I know what I'm going to see every day.
Yeah, I don't think I'd thrive in that environment.
No, I think I would. My cousin's a pharmacist, and I'm actually going to get her on the podcast at some point. And I think like she has some really interesting stories about, you know, patients that she's dealt with, and that's like even coming from like the pharmacy aspect, where you're like at the point where, you know, you're like, you kind of know what's wrong and you're prescribing them something. So I just think, oh, it must be mental when you first start seeing them. But I'm like you, I've got a lot of friends who are junior doctors, because when I did my master's degree, a lot of intercalating medics did the master's as well. And speaking to them, I mean, because it's so far removed from anything that I've ever done, it was just great, like listening to things that they did and things that they saw. And I must admit, like some of the stories are very along the same lines of choosing a needle that might cause a little bit more pain. They're like, oh yeah, you know, if somebody, as you said, if somebody comes in drunk, or if somebody says something that, you know, their maybe's not meant to say, then it's probably one of those things that like isn't spoken about, but it's definitely done.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're still doing things like safely and properly and you're not actually putting people at risk, I guess it's fine. You know, it's a bit like when, you know, I don't know if you've ever worked in retail, but like it's a similar kind of thing when you have like horrible customers and you're just like, oh, I'm just going to go in the back and take longer to get your thing.
Yeah, yeah, I can understand that. Yeah,
so it's kind of a similar thing. Obviously, it's very different to a needle, but still like causing a bit of annoyance to that annoying person just to feel a little bit better about yourself.
Definitely. Oh, I just think, especially like working with patients, I mean, like obviously, as you say, you have a lot of volunteers, but you're still working with people. And I think people can just be so unpredictable. Like you just don't know what way they're going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Which is why I think everyone should work in hospitality or retail before they do anything in their life.
See, I never have. So I feel like I've like missed out on that aspect. I like still have patience for people.
Oh, your patience gets tested, but you know your limits and you know, like, I don't know. I think everyone should just experience maybe working in retail or hospitality just so they treat other people better, like generally speaking. Like, you know, when you get like awful patients or customers, they might actually treat people better if they worked in like a customer facing thing, but you never know. Not always true.
true, very true. Yeah, maybe that would be good actually. See, these are all really like going quite nicely into each other. So talking about kind of like how to like deal with people and maybe in some aspects kind of having a bit of a poker face when speaking to people is something that would probably be quite beneficial in this next confession. I don't actually know how I'm going to get through this without laughing. So I work in andrology. So for anybody who doesn't know what andrology is, that's basically where you like test semen. Setting the tone for this confession already.
So here for it.
I know. I thought you'd, I thought, who can I put this one with? And I thought, Beth's the one.
Oh, yes.
So in an andrology lab, they look at everything from sperm count to infections. And this is the confession. Men have to bring their samples fairly fresh and hand it straight over to laboratory staff. I always find it a bit awkward having them hand over a piping hot sample and having to ask when they obtained the sample. But sometimes there can be very obviously something wrong with it and it makes the situation 10 times worse. Oh God. A few times I've had to look these men in the eye when they hand over a sample that's clearly a little bit brown. That's right, they have feces in their semen. I just don't know what to make of that. I feel like I need to like describe to the listeners, Beth's face is just like, you, I feel like your jaw's just dropped.
I mean, I don't really know what they're doing.
I was like, is it that they just like haven't, they're not like the cleanest, so like there's feces kind of like as they're obtaining the sample, or is it like actually like an internal thing? Like, can you get, can it like, can the tubes get, I'm not sure. I don't know.
I'm sure that's not good.
I mean, because I'm trying to think, and I mean, like my male anatomy is clearly not that great because I have no idea how this has happened, but I'm like, oh.
Maybe, well, I don't know. Maybe they just got so excited.
Oh no, stop.
And that's all I can say.
Oh God.
But that is awkward. Like, I don't think I'd be able to keep a poker face, obviously. I mean, I know people can't see my face right now, but I have the worst poker face ever. I'd be terrible at that.
Yeah, it's all in the eyes, I feel like. Like, my eyes would just be, like, as wide as saucers, and I'd just be staring, like, either trying to, like, maintain so much eye contact that it made it look like I wasn't dying inside.
Yeah, like, or I've not blinked in 2 minutes.
Yeah. So fine. Oh, I do understand that, though, to be fair, because it must be as awkward for them as it is for the staff who are dealing with that, because, you know, it's a very, like, personal thing anyway. But then I guess you've got to handle it with so much care because you don't know the reasons why that patient's there. And, you know, if it's like an infertility issue, you don't want to be really insensitive by
yeah
like laughing at although a brown sample, come on, how can you not laugh at that?
I mean, it's a bit questionable, isn't it? So yeah, I think, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I'd probably laugh. I know I would laugh, and it's really bad. And as soon as I start laughing, I can't stop. So it's a good job I don't do anything like this, because I'd be the worst.
It's so, I just don't know. I think, going back to doctors again, though, like, surely they must crack a bit of a smile sometimes if, you know, they get a patient coming in and says, they say something that's, you know, about how they've maybe got a certain injury. You know, you can get like sex injuries and things like that, and you know, how would you keep a straight face if it was, you know,
yeah,
like, I don't know, I'm trying to be really delicate about this and not be like horrible, but at the same time it's like,
I mean, like, you've mentioned that this is gonna hurt book, like, I know that Adam Kay, the author, like, he talks about some of those things. I think it was about Annie. So I think there must be moments where you're like, sometimes life surprises you, whether it's
whether it's, you know,
a dodgy injury or some brown sample that shouldn't be brown.
Oh, no. It's so grim. Actually, it takes me back. I did get some like really strange confessions from people who were like, oh, I work in like such and such a lab and I really like the smell of like this. And I was like, oh,
no,
that's not something you want to be sharing, whether it's anonymous or not. I don't want to be hearing it.
I mean, unless it's 70% ethanol.
True. I mean, there is that. I mean, sometimes I think, you know, people will like confess to these things. I'm like, you realize that I have to go through these, you know?
Yeah, it's someone like, reading them.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously go through these all for everybody's listening pleasure, but I have to wade through some strange stuff.
Speaking of the 70% ethanol, I mean, I've definitely, when it was my final year project, I did cell culture, and obviously you spray a lot of stuff with the 70% ethanol. Mm. And I hope you appreciate this story. Me and my friends did a bit of a spur of the moment night out because S Club 7 were in town in Huddersfield. On a night out and we went to this club where like S Club 7, I think there was only three of them at this point, but it was like S Club 7. I was like, and then we had to be in the lab really early the next day for our project stuff. And I was like, we were all so hungover and we're playing, spraying the blooming 70% ethanol. And one of my friends like had to run out and leave the room to like be ill, because he was like, it's like we're just spraying like vodka everywhere. And I think I'm going to be sick. And then we all just said to our supervisor, he must have known. He was the nicest man, but he must have known. And we were just like, oh yeah, I think we've all just come down with something really nasty.
So you've definitely reached your right target audience here, because like S7 is my jam. Or even if it is only three of them, I'm still game.
But it was so much fun and totally worth it.
In my undergrad, our sort of like big, one of our biggest uni nights out was on a Wednesday night, and it was to this really awesome club in town, and they had like really cheesy music, which was like S Club 7, like Steps, like a bit of Robbie Williams, like Steps. McFly. I was like, this is like the best, you know. But I very rarely went, you know, because Mrs. Responsible over here, I had a lab at like 8:30 in the morning on a Thursday morning. And it was like a 3 or 4 hour lab. And I was like, there is just absolutely no way that I could go to that hungover. I would have died, genuinely. And it wouldn't have just been a case of like, I mean, I just had visions of like, as you say, having to like sprint out to be ill, or like being ill in there. And I just thought, oh, it's just not something I could do, you know. And I've seen, because they were on the Thursday morning, I would see so many people just like keeling over because we had the Bunsen burners on and they were overheating, or they hadn't eaten since, you know, 18 hours previously. Yeah. Or they'd had like a dirty kebab after their night out, and you're just like, oh, it just wasn't the one. I don't know who decided that it was a good idea to schedule those labs then, but if you're listening, you are evil.
I was going to say, someone evil, someone who didn't enjoy uni.
No, who doesn't understand, you know, it's all about the experience, guys.
Yeah, 8:30 lab, that is awful. That is so awful.
So grim. I've been teaching this week, and they've been like three-hour labs, and 3 hours is still, I feel like, a long lab, you know?
Yeah.
It's a long time to be in there and concentrating, and especially when a lot of the techniques are so new to you. I think it's very overwhelming.
Yeah.
So I do feel quite sorry for students. I'm quite glad that I'm out of that part of learning now, because, you know, at least we have the autonomy to go in and do what we want, and if I want to just nip out for a quick chocolate bar or a drink, then I can find an appropriate place to stop in between all my experiments and peg it out of the lab, albeit to eat, not be sick like a smell vodka.
Times have changed. Times,
I know,
have definitely
we're
changed.
So old. Oh, it's funny. But I think we'll do our last confession now. So this is going in a slightly different direction, but I thought this would be a nice one to kind of discuss. So I'm a PhD student, and sometimes when I'm bored in the lab, I will sneeze into my hand and spread it onto an agar plate. I'll come back the next day and see what's grown. Kind of cool to see what's going on up my nose. Microbes rule.
I mean, that is cool.
I would probably do that. I'm not going to lie.
I
kind of want to know what's going on. We, in our first year labs, I remember we did some swabs, and I'm sure we did like cheek swabs to see what was inside our mouths. I might be making that up, but I feel like
That sounds cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And we did like, we did our fingers to see like what was on our hands. That was always a good one.
I didn't do any microbiology labs. I kind of wish I did, actually.
So what was your undergrad in?
It was biochemistry.
Okay.
It was all like molecular and cellular biology and like enzyme kinetics and stuff like that.
But
microbiology would have been cool. Yeah, great stuff. I've forgotten a lot of my enzyme kinetics now.
I don't think I don't know any enzyme kinetics. Like, not stuff that I'm particularly strong on at all.
It's quite dry.
Yes.
But I wish you did microbiology labs. That sounds cool. I mean, it's definitely not the same vein at all, but so I've used my own blood in the lab, and I've just been particularly nosy just to see like how I like respond to stuff, and then like check my platelet counts and things like that, and be like, yeah, she's good. She'll clot if she hurts herself. Like,
oh no. So yeah, I think that's really cool. Like, I don't know what blood type I am, and I really want to know. So like, if I was ever going to do like a blood typing lab, I think there is one scheduled for the undergraduate teaching soon, and I'm kind of hoping that I'm scheduled for it, because I really want to know what I am. Like, I find some of that really interesting.
That would be cool if you can go to that. That would be awesome. I don't know. I mean, it's not something that you're like, you only kind of find out if you go and do blood donations at like the blood bank. Do you find out, do they tell you? I feel like they should tell you.
I think they do. Yeah, I'm sure my dad's given blood before, and I think he has like a card that says what blood type he is.
I would love to be something interesting, whatever that means, but like, you know, one of the rarer ones, but probably
I'm probably pretty bog standard as well. I did try and figure it out, because I do a lot of genetics, so I tried to work it out based on what my mom and my dad are, but my mom's not 100% sure. And I can't remember what my dad is, but I think because of what they both are, there's like not really any chance that I can be a particularly interesting one. But I find it really interesting, like a lot of the, I mean, I don't know much about blood, so bear with me on this. I did like a hematology module in my final year, and it wasn't really my strength, so bear with. But I find it really interesting, like when a woman's pregnant, if she's not the same blood type as her baby, that can cause like problems during pregnancy. And it's all to do with like what's on the surface of the blood. And I like that absolutely blew my mind, because I was like, I had no idea that that was even a thing. And it's not something that many people know about, you know, like I don't know what my blood type is. So if I get pregnant, I mean, I'm not planning on getting pregnant, but if I do in the next, you know, however many years, and I still don't know what my blood type is, I have no idea if that could happen or not. Sorry, I've gone off on a bit of a tangent there, but I just find that so interesting.
Yeah, I also don't know, because you wouldn't be able to find out the baby's blood type until, I know you can do certain tests, can't you? Like, I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but
I feel like
you don't find out the baby's blood type until they're born. So it's like, But then I know that there's like risk. I'm totally paraphrasing because I remember, I know exactly what you mean, but I can't remember what it was called. But there's like risk of like bleeding or like
I was gonna
Ill,
say,
like
it, yeah, is
it's
it like
an inflammatory like cytokine storm or something like that,
yes.
like during.
So it's something, so it's like you can go like it's sort of like a transvaginal kind of scan, I suppose, but there's like a probe on the end or something that can take like a sample from the fetus, I think, and it can go like into the amniotic sac. I now don't know if I've just been watching too much Grey's Anatomy and I've just completely made that up. some doctors are going to be listening to this like, you absolute moron, that is not something that you can do. And I'm like, yeah, you can totally like test the blood of
just
the baby.
Say it with confidence. Yeah. I'm a scientist.
Yeah. I have definitely just been watching far too much of Meredith Grey and Derek Shepherd.
See, I've never watched Grey's Anatomy, but I used to be obsessed with House.
I know. Yes, that. Oh, yes.
Oh, I kind of want to watch it again. No, yes. I'm not going
to
do it.
I need to pick something to watch tonight, and now I'm like, oh, maybe I might watch a bit of House.
It's always lupus. Oh, that's what the first thing is that they think.
That's that meme, isn't it? It's always lupus. Yeah.
Is it lupus? Well, lupus is hard to figure out.
Oh, I love it. Oh God. Well, I think that's all the confessions for today's episode. I hope that they were all good.
They
for
were
you.
Good.
I think some of them were quite like juicy.
Juicy, yeah. I'm kind of jealous of like some of the things that you get to read. I mean, I know you said some of them are a bit weird, but yeah. I'll be listening for more because I'm very interested to see what people.
Oh, I love it. Thank you. And again, like, thank you so much for coming on. It's been really great to chat with you. And I mean, we were saying this before we started recording, like, I feel like, I mean, myself and Beth have never actually met each other in person, but I feel like you're like a long lost friend that I've known for years because we met through Instagram. We both do a lot of psychom. And yeah, like to round up, do you want to sort of tell people where they can find you online?
Yes. So my handle for pretty much everything is @_Bethology. So Beth and then Ology. And I do have a blog, but I've not blogged for a very long time. But if you want to look at that, it's just www.bethology.co.uk. And I've got all my links and stuff there. Yeah, I just chat about science, blood stuff, generally what it's like doing a PhD, usually a lot of despair.
It's good. It's all very relatable and like
keeping it real.
Yeah, but like a lot of the blood stuff as well is really interesting. And I think a lot of it is things that people, you know, wouldn't know unless it's spoken
quite
about.
Niche,
so yeah, I think it's great that you talk about it. And Beth also has a TikTok.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, you're more on it with the TikTok. TikTok scares me a little bit. I'm definitely more of an observer than a contributor.
See, I feel like I'm more of an observer. Like, I watch a lot. And then every now and again, inspirational just sort of like hit me. But I know I really like, so you do a lot of like informative stuff on there. And I find that really good. Like, I haven't quite figured out how to do the whole like sci-com thing on there. I kind of just do some stupid dances. But
I try to put, to be honest with you, it's all a friggin', there's so much of like, so many means of producing content these days. I don't know how to keep up, to be honest. But I quite like TikTok for fun though. Like I'd love to do those videos where like people do like the 60-second like science, you know, things. Dead good description there, Beth. But I just like, is it another thing that I can do?
Yeah,
can I really
commit to that? It is hard. I appreciate that because I feel exactly the same. You know, I feel like I've got my finger in a lot of different pies with SciComm, and it's kind of finding what you enjoy. And I personally don't feel like, I mean, I just don't have the time to kind of sit there and make a super like animated video that has lots of text on. Like I'll happily sit down and I do this on my Instagram for like a minute and kind of talk through a topic, but I tend not to put too much text on or things like that because, you know, at the end of the day we are quite busy people, and you know, especially final year PhD students, we've got a lot going on. But you know, everything that you're doing, I feel like you're absolutely smashing it. It's, you know, you've got really good engagement on all of your socials, and I like genuinely really like look forward to seeing what you're posting. I find it really informative, so no,
that's
keep going.
Yeah, I love following you as well. I look, your stories are like the best thing. When I see your story pop up, I'm like, yes, What's Maria up to? Love it.
Normally just having a breakdown.
Aren't we all, to be honest? I'm scared that I'm going to end up like crying on a story, like full on crying.
Oh, I've been there. I've done that. It's fine.
I know, but it's not going to be pretty. So it will happen, no doubt. You know, we've got the thesis to write yet. So
we're all in it together. What we'll have to do, Beth, is we'll have to just like have a meetup where we just sit and cry and write thesis together.
Right. Yeah. Moral support. We definitely got this.
Oh, well, again, thank you so much for coming on. And yeah, make sure you all follow Beth on all of her socials. And who knows, we might even get you back for like a season 2 return.
I would love that. Oh. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So there you have it. There was my chat with the absolutely fantastic Beth Webb. I don't know about you, but I really enjoyed listening to Beth talk about her research, and obviously it was great to share some lab confessions with her and also hear some of her own as well. You know, I'm hoping as the weeks go by, you can see that we're all in the same boat. We all make stupid mistakes sometimes, and that's just the way it is. That's what's fun about it. So yeah, thank you so much, Beth, for agreeing to come on the podcast. I'm already making plans to have you reappear in season 2. As always, if you would like to appear on the podcast, please send me an email or come and drop me a message on my socials. Everything is at Fly in the Lab, or you can email me at flyinthelab@gmail.com. please check out Beth at _Bethology. She is also on Twitter, and I'll make sure I put all of those details down below in the description box as usual. And yeah, I hope you all have a fantastic couple of weeks, and I'll see you again in 2 weeks' time. Speak to you later. Bye.